Welcome to the Big Fellas Podcast, where we chop it up about all things past, present, and future about the game of basketball. Where facts, stats, and context reign supreme.
That is blasphemous!
Sometimes it gets crazy, but we always keep it real.
Always keep it real.
Get ready to learn from players, coaches, and fans from all levels of the game and see the court in a brand new way. And now, fresh off the sidelines, here's your host, John Hartofilis.
What it do, fellas, and welcome to the Big Fellas Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, JH, coming to you from New York City, the mecca of basketball. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Coach Nelson Taroba. Coach Nelson is an assistant coach and defensive coordinator for the Dallas Mavericks affiliate, Texas Legends. In this episode, we had a lot of fun talking about how Coach Nelson fell in love with being around the game, coaching lessons that transcend levels, and the importance of the defensive side of the ball. We've got a good one in store for you today, fellas. Episode number 26, Nelson Taroba, Legends Defensive Specialist. Hey, Coach Nelson, what's going on?
Good to meet you. Good to meet you. Good to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate you for coming on. We're going to have a really good discussion about all the cool stops you made and all the cool things you've been up to. So just to start off, can you kind of give our listeners a little description of kind of that first time you got into the game of basketball and what that looked like for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, that goes back to, obviously, childhood. My brother, actually, I looked up to my brother growing up. He was older than me by a couple years. So when I was young, like in fourth grade, I'd go watch him play. And then, you know, I then aspired to want to do that as well. So, you know, played through high school, Dripping Springs, Texas, which is outside of Austin. Was there, really enjoyed, loved playing, loved, you know, my team in high school. We had a really successful senior year, you know, district champs and, you know, a big deal for us. But just had such a great time with the team and such a great time with my teammates and just enjoyed the team. I went to UT, University of Texas in Austin. And one of the things, as I went, I enrolled in the business school at UT. And, you know, what happened is that, you know, I did that for 2 years. It was fine. I could have kept doing it. And people kept telling me when I was coming up, you know, or making those decisions that, you know, you should definitely not do teaching and coaching because, you know, there's not enough money in it is what they would tell me. So so I did business school kind of out of reaction to that. And, you know, I volunteered at my alma mater as the middle school kind of volunteer coach while I was in college, ran the seventh and eighth grade off season, and I'd be in class and I'd be drawing up plays and doing practice plans and kind of told me that that's probably what I should do.
That's awesome. I can relate to that so much because I'm currently a 20-year-old junior in college. And in my freshman year, I played varsity at Xavier High School, my senior year before that in high school. And my coach had asked me, you know, our coach Curley, he's been here for 20 years. He's retiring now. Would you like to come in and take the freshman team? And it was like, he gave me a week to decide, but my answer was yes from the moment he asked me. So, and I've loved every second of it since then. I mean, I'm just curious, like, so you were obviously a super young coach. The kids weren't that much younger than you. What was that kind of like for you in terms of being a young coach at that time?
Well, a couple of things. So it's interesting how it works. There was a coach, you know, I went to Dripping Springs. I really enjoyed my coach, Coach Shelton, and in high school. And then there was a girls coach, Coach English, who was very successful, who was a girls coach at our school. And he actually, I was shooting in the gym after school one day as, after our season was over as a senior. And he called me into his office and he said, hey, you know, have you ever thought about coaching? And I said, yeah, actually I have, you know, and he's like, well, I think you'd be really good if you decided to do it. In terms of this, you know, the reason I mentioned that to your question is, you know, just starting at a young age, like I just always, probably like you, you know, just kind of just naturally enjoyed, you know, teaching, enjoyed helping, loved the game, you know, and I also was quick to relate to those players because I remember obviously being a middle schooler, being an eighth grader, you know, wishing that I had a coach that would, you know, give me some things that could help me improve and that cared, you know, and all that stuff. So obviously when you're young, there's the benefit of being able to connect with your players because of the age and the relatability from that sense. But also, and I'm sure you've seen it yourself, John, you know, working, you also want to be a real coach. So you don't want to be just their buddy and just their friend. So At a young age, I think it was really good for me to learn how to be relatable, but also be in charge and be a leader, be a coach, not be a friend, be a coach figure. And so it was, you know, there are challenges with it, but I really enjoyed it. And it was really kind of got me going on my coaching career, to be honest with you.
Well, that's great. And it's a very difficult to kind of tread that line of, am I being there too close to am I their best friend now, or am I still able to be a coach? And then also at the same time, they're comfortable coming to me and telling me, you know, coach, I'm having trouble with this, whether it's class or something. And they know, okay, I can go to Coach John because he's 20 as opposed to another coach that's older. I'm comfortable telling him. So like that relationship is super important to be able to foster, and then also to keep it in check so that it doesn't go overboard. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. So then after you, a few years go on, are still in the education space, what ended up having you make that transition to coaching the professional ranks?
Okay. So then I was at Texas, and so when I was there, I ended up becoming a student manager. So the same coach, Coach English, who had encouraged me to think about coaching, I was working his summer basketball camp, and he had one of those daily messages of, you know, kind of don't put off, you know, what you want to do in, you know, another day kind of thing. And so it got me thinking. And so Coach Barnes, Rick Barnes, had just been hired at the University of Texas. So I, that day, went home and wrote a letter to Coach Barnes, you know, kind of saying that I had read a book about him, and that I would, you know, I'm a Texas fan, I'm a Texas student, would love to just sweep the floors, work for free, just learn about the game. And about 4 or 5 days later, I got a voicemail. Well, back in the day, because I'm old, there was a voice answering machine. So there was an answering machine with a voicemail from one of the assistant coaches saying, Coach Catala saying that, you know, Coach Barnes read your letter and we'd love you to come in and work camp. So the reason I say that is because working Texas camp and then eventually becoming a manager was the first thing that really opened my eyes up to this kind of higher level of basketball, this, you know, deeper dive into the game, you know, that level of competitiveness, all that stuff. So I always enjoyed high school and I enjoyed playing and learning it. But being in Texas allowed me to see just how much there was to learn. So being there for a year, you know, a couple years as a manager and 1 year on staff as a special assistant. After that, I decided I wanted just to do high school and teach and coach. So I did that for 9 years. And one of the people I worked with at Texas, Will Voigt, he was a special assistant when I was. He ended up going on his own track after Texas and became a professional coach in Norway and Vermont. He ended up being the head coach of the G League, back then the D League, Bakersfield Jam. We always kept in contact. I thought forever that there's not one bit of me that ever wanted to be a pro head coach or a pro coach. I thought that pros would not want to be coached. I thought there was not much that I could offer them, you know, in terms of my experience. And, you know, I just didn't know if there was even much coaching at the pro level, you know. And so that was a lot of misconceptions I had. But Will and I were talking, and one time he just said, you know, if you would like, I have an open position here, kind of video assistant coach. If you want to come up, you know, we would love to have you. And so I was an assistant at that time. I thought maybe I can do this and grow and improve myself so I can be a better high school coach. So I went and did it. And when I did it, I really, really enjoyed it. Was just loved that whole kind of level of the game. That again, this the pace of the game, the amount of knowledge, learning the systems, the terminology, all this stuff, like seeing how to make that all come to life. And then lastly, really seeing that these players also, you know, wanted coaching, were coachable, that there was things to help them with. And all those realizations helped me understand that the pro game was something that I could enjoy.
That's fantastic. And especially considering like guys that get to that level, they get to that level because they've been coachable their entire lives. If you're not coachable, the chance of you getting to that pro level is very, very difficult. So it's great that you point that out, because it is something that people think like, oh, you know, those guys coach themselves. But no, they've gotten to that point by letting other people coach them, by deferring and saying, okay, where can I get help to get it better at whatever aspect of the game that it is. So that's great. And it's something that would I be comfortable in a situation, because Xavier, like it's home to me. So that's why it's easy to coach there. how it, that's something I have to figure out over the next few years is, am I comfortable in other situations? Could I blend myself in it? And that's, and what you just articulated in terms of that decision for you is something that's very real for a lot of coaches. So that's awesome.
And being there, you know, and learning from Will's a very good coach, Will Voigt. It kind of gave me a template too. You know, Will's not a former player, right? He's a guy who, you know, I worked alongside, so he's a guy that I could relate to in terms of, you know, finding a pathway up into, you know, pros and stuff like that from a non-playing background. Also at that time is when I met George Galanopoulos, who's the head coach now at the Texas Legends. So he was there, and we worked together for a year and kind of started, you know, friendship, mentorship kind of relationship at that point. And then, you know, so that's, you know, fast forward to, we'll get to that and the story where I'm at now, but that's, you know, 10 years ago and later down the road, George, as he is now the head coach of the Texas Legends, was kind enough to, you know, offer me a position, you know, when I was looking this past season, and it's ended up being a really good setup for me. So
it's fantastic. That's how it all works out. So you've obviously touched on a lot of the mentors that you've had that have guided you through this whole thing. How important is that for you to have mentors like that, that could take a chance on you and say, whether it's now with the Legends or even earlier when you were at Texas, what was that like for you?
Oh man, mentors are everything. You know, like they're the people that make you see things before you can see them, right? That's what coaches do too, right? So Coach English was a mentor. He helped me see that I could be a great coach, or, you know, his version of that. Before I, you know, had it in my head, but he made it seem more real. You know, when I was at Texas, Rob Lanier, Coach Lanier is you know, still a guy I look up to. He's now the head coach at Georgia State. But he's just a really honest, great, you know, charismatic, but just true high character guy who, you know, when I was there at Texas, he helped recruit TJ Ford. And he told me even then, he's like, if we can get TJ Ford here to Texas, you know, he'll be the first of many that come this way. And he was very prophetic in the sense that, you know, after that we get, you know, KD, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, Daniel Gibson, you know, PJ Tucker. I mean, there's so many players that came through that. Avery Bradley, Corey Joseph, you know, and TJ Ford was the start of that. But Coach Lanier was a big mentor to me, Russ Springman there at Texas. And then, you know, when I got into high school coaching, you know, obviously the people I worked with were big for me. And then, with Will, again, him showing kind of the template for success as a pro coach was big. And then I worked at Erie with Coach Peterson. He was great, great player development coach, excellent and high character guy, very, very, you know, good guy to learn from. And, you know, everywhere you go and every step along the way, you know, the reality is we're always learning, you know, and, you know, I always say that everybody needs coaching and the coaches need coaching, right? So the more that you can, you know, you, me, all of us can surround ourselves with a circle of influence that can help, you know, mentor us and lead us in during tricky times, that's what everybody needs.
Of course, that's super important. And it's a message to all our listeners, you know, find your mentors, find people that will see things for you before you're able to see them. That's a great message. So then you end up making the decision to coach professionally, whether it's when you're an assistant with the Erie Blackhawks or later down the line. What has that been like for you? And obviously everyone always talks about how different the G League is from other leagues, obviously from the college game, from any other league, being that whether it's roster turnover or things of that nature, what's that been like for you?
Good question. I think, to be honest with you, I've always viewed coaching very similarly. So coaching is teaching, right? So each day that you're in the gym is a lesson plan, right? And a teaching opportunity. And so regardless of the turnover or the, you know, stability or whatever that's going on all around you, at the end of the day, every day you show up to work, it's the same. You know, we're teaching today with whatever we have in front of us and whoever we have in front of us. So I think honestly, my ability, you know, my experience as a high school coach for those years has been invaluable for me as a pro coach, because in high school, you know, I say this, high school coaches could learn from pro coaches, high school and college coaches could learn from pro coaches. in the sense that as a pro coach, you have to earn your players' respect every day. You earn your players' respect with your preparation, with your ability to prepare them for the situations and get them better for their success, your competence, right? They're not going to really get too fired up about your motivational speeches and things like that. They just want to know, how are we going to win and how am I going to improve? So you have to earn it every day as a pro coach. So that's one thing. And the other thing that college and high school coaches could learn from pro coaches is that you have to be organized. You have to be efficient. You have to have a system of talk and language that's organized. And you can get in and out of a practice in an hour and a half or 2 hours and get everything you need done, you know, if you're efficient. So I think high school and college coaches can tend to drag it on, can try to, you know, they like to do drills for the sake of drills because they like a drill. You know, when you're a pro coach, you know, we don't have time to do that half-assed drill that's cool to look at that doesn't actually apply to the game, right? So you got to be really intentional. Now, the flip side is this, what helped me as a pro coach or has helped me as a pro coach and general manager when I was at St. John, you know, is that I think pro coaches should have the high school coach mentality, which is, and college coaches as well, which is, as a high school coach, I have to teach whoever's there. I don't get to bitch, whine, and complain about, we need better players, or we need to go trade for somebody else, or the roster is flawed. When you're a high school coach, you know, this is the group I have. You don't complain, whine, or wish you had better. You know that that's what it is. Your job as a high school coach is to coach and teach whoever's there. So that mentality of just teaching whoever it is, if they're low and you're coaching freshmen and freshman B team, you've got to find a way. You might have to teach left-handed layups one day. You may have to teach the basics, right? And you've got to be able to go from, you know, this level down here all the way to this level up here as a high school coach on a daily basis and teacher. So that those skills and that training is absolutely what you need to be a good pro coach. Because sometimes, especially in the G League, we get guys, you know, like we had guys this year that were 19 and 20 years old who maybe had 1 year of college experience. So they really are at a high school level of knowledge sometimes. So you have to be able to meet their needs at that level. And then also you've got to be able to meet the needs of the 10-year pro who's on your team as well. So you've got to go between all those levels of knowledge.
Of course. And I couldn't help but laugh when you brought up the left-handed layup, because all my freshmen listen to this podcast and they know there were a lot of left-handed layups both missed and taken in practice this year to get better at them. So that was definitely funny. It's so true that to look at it through that lens of I'm here to teach, I'm not here to because when you look at it from I'm here to teach instead of I'm here to win games, everything changes. Your approach changes, because it's not from the sense of like I'm showing this for you so I can we can game so I can look good. It's I'm teaching you this so you can become a better player, and that's what I care about. So that's super important and super key.
And that's what leads to winning.
That's true. And you get the result you're looking for to begin with.
Right.
So that's great. So from the G League, obviously you went to the NBL with the St. John Riptide. I actually had on Aldi Stevenson on just a few days ago, and we were talking about the differences between the NBL and all these other leagues. What was that transition to, especially that we just discussed the G League and what that was like, to now go over to Canada?
Well, you know, again, every step along the way has helped me be prepared for the next one. So, you know, being able to have seen, you know, the G League, you know, operate at a higher level or whatever you want to say, you know, helped me understand that I had, I'm just like any other human being. You know, whenever you go into a new setting, when you go into, you know, if I'm going to be the head coach and general manager, right, of the St. John Riptide, well, I haven't been the general manager before, right? But I have been a head varsity coach and had to make cuts for freshmen and JV and varsity and had to pick a team, right? So, you know, I have been at Texas and helped with recruiting. So, you know, some of the same concepts come up. But so the NBL itself is a great league. It's very competitive. They have 7 Americans on a roster and 3 Canadians. So 7 out of 10 are American, 3 are Canadian. And so what happens there, it's one of the most competitive international leagues there are, because it's got some of the most Americans allowed on a roster. So what happens is the league itself is not a league that pays exorbitantly. Like, you know, the money in the league is not out of, you know, out of control. It's not Euro Cup or anything like that. It's but it's a great league for players, really good players to get a chance to start their careers and also to be playing against very high level players. So we've had at St. John, we had guys like from high major D1s from Baylor, we had TJ Maston. I had guys from D3, D2, you know, all the way, the whole gamut, high majors, all playing in the same league. And but the league itself is very good, very competitive. The coaching is very good. So I would say to you or anyone, like when I compare the NBL Canada to the G League, I'd say the top three players on any roster in the NBL Canada are good enough to make a roster on the G League. It's just a question of, you know, fit and opportunity a lot of times.
Of course, and that's super important too, to figure out that balance of fit and opportunity and where you go for that. I was curious, what exactly is Hoops 101? I noticed that, and I was curious as to how that fit in with everything.
Well, Hoops 101, when I was in college in the year 2000, I worked a camp it was called Don Meyer. Don Meyer used to be, you know, a great legendary teacher of the game. He used to have a camp in Nashville, which was the biggest camp in the nation, 600, 700 kids a week. But Don Meyer, who was a descendant of Snow Valley, which I later learned. And so Snow Valley is a basketball school that I still go to every year. Santa Barbara, it's where guys like Coach Popovich, the Van Gundys, Pat Riley, Rick Majerus, all these coaches, you know, legendary coaches, John Wooden, you know, it's on the West Coast near Santa Barbara, where it was kind of one of the first teaching camps ever. Well, Don Meyer went there, took his model to Nashville. I went and worked his camp, and I was just like, man, this is great. The way they teach, it's awesome. So I wanted to start my own camp in Austin, where I'm from. And so just kind of got the idea, you know, in my head and started the camp Hoops 101 and did that. We haven't, you know, we only do like one session a year right now, but you know, being away from Austin, it's gotten a little smaller over the years, but it was really my chance to basically, you know, kind of like what you're doing, John, like just have your own baby where you get to be creative, do your own teaching, come up with everything, you know, hire people, you know, come up with curriculum, come up with marketing, come up with whatever. What are we going to teach? How am I working with kids? How am I managing a whole group of gym of people? How am I organizing? So Hoops 101 was probably one of the best things I've ever done in terms of teaching and learning as well, because, you know, at a young age, at the age of 21, I was, you know, in charge of basically an operation that made me have to be in charge of other peers, instruction, all that stuff, running a business, if you will. And those things really accelerated my growth. And what happens is, just like, you know, they talk about the 10,000 hour rule, you know, every time I taught, you know, I would teach every year and every session, I would be refining, how am I teaching defense? How are we teaching defense? How are we making this better? I saw that fourth grader picked this up, that ninth grader picked this up. How can I make this simple enough that sixth graders could learn it just like 12th graders could? So you really are almost like working in a lab, constantly a teaching lab, where you see, how can I get my teaching tighter and simpler and more effective so that it is more universal? And the truth is, you know, what I would teach our guys in the pros now, I tell people this, you know, the only difference between me and a high school coach is just my title, you know, but I think that ability to, that what I teach now, hopefully I make it so simple that I would teach a sixth grader the same thing and they could understand it. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand or don't readily pick up, is that they think to be a pro coach, you need to be off the charts in all kinds of ways. I think you just have to be an excellent teacher with great command over the subject matter.
Okay. I love that, because your way to just bring together those two things that people would say were completely different: high school coach, professional coach, and be like, well, the everyone, the basketball knowledge is the same. It's all about whether or not you can take it from one level to the next in terms of can what you teach on one level also be taught at another level. And that whole idea of if you can, or if you're a good teacher, or if you're a good, if you can get people to listen to you, that's all you need. It's not about, okay, if a pro coach is 1,000 times smarter at basketball than a division one coach and then a division two coach and a division three coach. It doesn't work like that. It's not a perfect ladder. So that was awesome. And then I also like what you said about kind of just having your own baby. I always tell people I'm happy I started my own thing. But it kind of is like a baby. It's just something watching it grow up. It's 3-4 months old. We're getting baby steps to get it to, you know, 6 months, a year old, and we'll see how it goes from there. But no, that's awesome that you're able to start that. And it is such a great experience. Your mind just starts working differently. You start thinking differently now that you have your own thing to take care of, as opposed to doing stuff for other people. So that's great.
Yeah. And I would say one last thing about that is that, you know, I personally know several high school coaches, you know, that I coached against, that I'm friends with, that are better coaches than pro coaches I've worked with, you know. And I know, you know, same thing. I know some pro coaches that are obviously way better than high school coaches. So good coaching is good coaching. Good coaches take pride in their preparation. Good coaches take pride in their teaching, take pride in knowing their subject matter, take pride in connecting with their players and really helping their players. Take pride in the feedback process. You know, great coaches, it's just like master teaching. It is a process that is not tied to age level.
For sure. The athletes get better, but a good coach will be a good coach. That's great. So then now you're obviously with the Texas Legends, you're assistant coach and defensive coordinator. So I obviously want to touch on the defensive side of things, but what was it like kind of, obviously your relationship with Coach George in terms of deciding to go and work for the Legends, and then what it's been like since?
Yeah, you know, so with Canada, like I said, the league, so the team I was with, St. John, really enjoyed my time there, the people, the players. But what the reality sometimes a lot of people don't understand is about minor league pros is, you know, sometimes teams run out of money. So our team in St. John ran out of money, and because of that, the team disbanded, right? So then, you know, I didn't have a job, not for having been fired, but just because there was no more team. And so at that time, I had reached out to George and just said, hey, man, this just came up. This looks like, you know, we may not have a team next year. So if you hear of anything kind of stuff. And he had just, you know, he had just gotten the head job there. And he, you know, and my understanding was that his staff was full, but I was just, you know, because I know he would talk to people, he might hear something. Excuse me. He said, honestly, there might be something here. And I said, well, you know, that would be ideal. And so the reason it's ideal, obviously, you know, people talk about, you know, it's good to work with somebody you know. But, you know, the more I've been in the business and, you know, in the industry for longer and longer, you know, for me, it's about three things. You know, I want to work in a place where, you know, I am aligned with my leadership in terms of our values, what we think is important. You know, if not, no matter what we're doing beyond that, there's probably going to be a disconnect. You know, if my boss thinks, hey, it's all about the money, you got to get people in those seats. You know, I don't care if we cut this guy or keep that guy, or that guy, you know, is, you know, late for every meeting, and, you know, we just need people in the seats and, you know, hell with all the culture or whatever, then we probably won't have a lasting relationship, right? So it's really important that I share the values with my leadership. Number one, I'm aligned there. Number two, I want to come to work every day in a place where I enjoy coming to work and working with the people I'm around every day. And that means the players, that means the staff, that means, you know, everyone, support staff. So and thirdly, you know, you want to make, you know, at some point in time in your career, you know, you want to make enough money such that you don't have to think about it. You know, not that you need to make, you know, $1 million, $600,000, $200,000, or $100,000 even, but you want to make enough money so you don't have to think about it. So one thing that you know, working with George has been great because, you know, we are aligned in terms of our values. He is about, you know, wanting to help players first. He's not about self-promotion. You know what I mean? And he's about helping guys get better and helping people get more opportunities. So we share those values. He wants to be a great teacher. I do as well. So those kind of things some of the same things matter to both of us. So that's really critical in terms of us having a great working relationship. He's allowed me to be in charge of the defense. and then he's in charge of the offense. So the trust that he has in me is through the roof, and obviously me with him as well. So we have a really unique partnership where, you know, we just really work together on a lot of stuff constantly. So, and he has allowed me to have a lot of voice. So those things have been really good with George, and he's, you know, and you know, the, you know, he was very, you know, he led our team, you know, to a very great turnaround this past season. You know, we were in a position to make the playoffs, you know, before COVID kind of cut it short. But working with George has been a great deal of fun, and the staff has been great, and the players we had were great. And you know, being in Dallas is only 3 hours from Austin, which is home for me. So it was really a really good situation for me.
I know that's great. And what you're saying is so true about how important it is to be aligned with the staff, the people above you, only because it's not so much even that the connection has to be there for stuff to get done. It's also like for just you to be interested in what you're doing. And then that just raises your level. If you're trying to get guys to be the best players they could be, and it, like you're saying, ownership is just worried about the bottom line and bringing in dollars, then you're not going to get, both things aren't going to happen.
Right.
Seats aren't going to be filled because the team's going to be bad. And the team's going to be bad because you're trying to make them good, but you're also worried about all these other conflicting things. So it's so important to have that connection.
Well, what you're saying is right, John. Yeah. I think that it is the connection. And then like, just again, being able to, again, this is same thing with a player, by the way, when a player feels at home and connected with their coach, their head coach, right? I know what he wants. I know the system. I know how to use everything. I know where to use my talents, right? I know how I can, you know, have conversations with him, how to change things if I need to. When a player feels that level of security, support, and structure, right? They you're going to get the best version of a player. Well, that's no different for a staff member or for a head coach working with his front office. When you feel support, when you feel the structure and the alignment, and you feel how everything fits together, and now that you fit really well there, and how your strengths fit in, no matter who you are or what role you have, you're going to get the best version of that person if they feel those things.
A lot of the G League coaches that I've had on, I feel like all the ones that have these winning teams that are making the playoffs and winning teams while also developing players are the ones that put an emphasis on that, as opposed to putting an emphasis on, oh, well, John, you know, we're really looking to have a successful team and we're really looking at the marketability of our franchise. I don't really hear that a lot. I hear a lot about it's all about developing and all about getting, and when guys get called up, we're happy about that. We're not trying to keep guys down here to win games. When guys get called up to the league and we now have a less talented team, maybe we're happy about that because guys are getting the opportunities that they've earned and worked for. So that's super cool.
Indeed. But that's, you know, that's no different than high school coaching, right? That's no different than when I was a middle school coach. And, you know, you talked about, makes me laugh thinking about, you know, you talked about being a young coach, right? And, you know, getting used to it. I'll never forget the first game that I coached, right? I was probably 18. The guy who was supposed to, the original head coach of that, it was an eighth grade B team. We were down 17-4 at the half. Okay, this is Dripping Springs versus Lake Travis. Who cares? I remember it still. 17-4, we were down. You know, I go in at the halftime, and the coach is kind of like, he was getting ready for the A-team game. You know, the A-team. He's like, I was like, well, are you going to go talk to those guys? And he's like, you can have them. You know, I'm going to get ready for the A-team game. You know, so I was like, hey, perfect. I was all about it. So I go and talk to the guys. We're down 17-4. We end up coming back. You know, this is middle school, eighth grade B team. We end up coming back and we end up winning like 24-22, you know. But I'll remember, you know, talk about young coach and all that stuff. I remember there was a timeout at the end of that game. I called timeout and I'm trying to drop a play on the board. Who knows what I'm drawing, because it's completely trash, I'm sure of it. But I'm trying to drop a play because that's what, you know, you're supposed to do because you're a coach and you call up the timeout and you're supposed to have the play. And I'm trying to draw a play and I start trying to draw the play. And my hand is shaking because I'm like excited and I'm like all these things. And I remember one of the kids who was like an 18 player, his name's Ty Mullins. He was watching, you know, kind of like supporting, but he was watching. He's like, I started trying to draw on the board. He's like, coach, your hand's shaking. And I remember saying, I was like, shut up, Ty, y'all pay attention. You know, and I started to try to kind of fake it till I make it. But it's funny how you can get from that position there, that point in your development, right, as a coach, to, you know, now you're in, you know, a G League playoff situation or an NBL candidate, game five, you know, series defining game, and you're in a timeout and you feel the confidence of knowing how to handle that. You go to rewind 20 years earlier and you've got a shaky hand and you're in an eighth grade B team gym where with, you know, 25 people watching, and you still feel that connection to the game.
The connection to the game is always going to be there. And I mean, these events happened much more recently for me, just 2 years ago. But I remember, I can tell you the score and where we were, and what team we were playing, and who their best player was for all those teams, where my hand was shaking the whole time, and I'd go in and have to talk to the team afterwards. And it was funny because all the other coaches there are much older, and they were always like, oh, let's see if John, talk to the team. John, take this responsibility. Or go, yeah. Go do this. And I'd always have to do it. It was a learning experience, but it was definitely something that I always think back fondly on. So that's awesome.
For sure.
So just real quick to wrap up, I wanted to touch on some of the defensive stuff that you've done. Obviously, it's your specialty. I saw that you published the book, NBA Defense for All Levels, the 6 defensive questions every coach should answer. Can you kind of tell us a little about both what it was like writing that publication and also what that kind of looked like for you?
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, I really do enjoy doing clinics. I enjoy I've done some in Mexico. I've done some, you know, and in those virtual clinics, I've done a couple. I love to do it because, just like anything, you know, it forces you as a teacher to really corral your information, to really distill what you're teaching, to really, you know, just like when I was a classroom teacher, I used to teach world history, you know, and I'm trying to teach the American Revolution or the French Revolution or whatever, there's a lot of stuff there. So I've got to find a way to make the American Revolution seem easy and connected, right? And so with defense or offense or whatever we're doing with basketball, some of those same things are really important. So being able to distill, you know, defense to those 6 essential questions and being able to kind of help people find their own voice within those questions, I think is been critical. So for me, being able to teach, you know, and you, I think you've heard this, John, I'm sure you remember 25% of what you hear, 50% of what you see and hear, something like 75% of what you see, hear, and write down, but you remember like 95% of what you teach somebody else. So the more chances I get to teach, you know, in those clinic formats and put those things together, the more I say, hey, you know what, this is only getting me better for when I teach my team and coach my team the next season. So that's why I really enjoy the clinics.
Of course, and clinics are super interesting. I now just go to kind of absorb information, but you're right, to then teach it yourself, that's when you really get to master the information that you're talking about. So that's awesome. And Coach Nelson, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This was absolutely fantastic. I learned so much, just, and especially hearing from someone that kind of had a similar starting path as to the one I'm on right now. So that was super informative for me, and I know my listeners will join in as well. So thank you.
An honor. I appreciate you asking. Appreciate the good questions you had. And it seems like you've got your things figured out there at a young age. So, you know, I look forward to charting your success, John. And I really appreciate you even asking me to be on.
Thanks for listening to the Big Fellas Podcast. Check us out on all major social media platforms at Big Fellas Pod to join the chop up. You can also listen to us on every podcast platform on the planet. Stay tuned for the next episode, Big Fellas.